not so good at talking. Louise is on. She's on. Hi. She got on. Good to see you. Okay. Sarah, she's on. Okay. So what do they do? So we have a beautiful thing that the Levim were commanded to guard the Mishkan. And then what will happen, hopefully, the idea of guarding, well, we'll see in a minute what the real idea of guarding, but part of their role is not just guard physically, but to make sure that the people know where they can go and where they can't go. And that doesn't just mean physically step, but what they should be doing, guiding them, and what they shouldn't be doing, so that to ensure that they don't get punished and die, so to speak. So that's an overarching thing that we have with the Kaihanim and the Levim. And it's an interesting thing in a sense, if you think about it, sometimes we get chosen or we have a certain role, and we feel very secure in our role, and the people around us might feel a little bit less secure about our role. What we sometimes don't realize is that it is our responsibility also to put the people around us at ease. It is. We can't just think about ourselves and feel secure. Look around and see, are other people feeling insecure? See what you can do to help them feel secure and realize that you have a role, they have a role, everybody will keep what they need to keep, and things will work properly. So it's an interesting thing that we find, especially with people like the Kohanim and the Levim, who have a higher role, right? They're holier. So they might think, oh, we have no problem. We're sure we're fine. But that's not good enough. It's not good enough for you to be fine. Make sure everybody else around you also feels fine. Okay, so let's look into some of the psukim of the next perek. As we say now, we're starting at chapter 18, the last perek in Parshas Korach. Vayomer. It goes to the top of page 832. Vayomer Hashem el Aaron, and Hashem said to Aaron, Ata uvanecha, you and your children, ubeis avicha, and your house, your father's household, itcha tisu es avain hamikdash, shall carry the sin of the mikdash. It's said in a very interesting way. In other words, you got to be careful because anything that goes wrong will be upon you. Not only that, but just want to see. Yes, v'ata ubanecha itach, and you and your children with you, tisu es avin kuhunaschem, shall carry the sin of your kahuna. Again, the idea being that they have to be very, very careful. They are the ones who have to be very, very careful to warn any stranger who wants to come to a place that they're not meant to come, that they shouldn't. So interesting, because the Kaihanim are allowed to go in places even the Levim are not allowed to go. So the Kaihanim have to watch over the Levim. The Levim and the Kaihanim together watch over the rest of the Jewish people. And they make sure that nobody oversteps or goes where they shouldn't go, and everybody remains safe and sound. Okay, let's just do another Pasuk Beis and Gimel. Let's see. V'gam es achecha mata Levi. And here you see that the Kehanim are entrusted, we say. Also your brethren, the tribe of Levi. Shevet avicha, the tribe of your father. Hakrev itcha, shall draw near you. V'yilavu alecha, and they will be joined to you. V'yishar sucha, and they will minister you. Which sounds like, yishar sucha is like mishareis, like that. It almost sounds like they will serve you. So Rashi points out an interesting thing. That means that the regular people of Levi served the Kohanim. So you might think, as Rashi says, that the Kohen can ask the Levi to do anything for him. You know, do whatever, all the odd jobs. No. When it says that the Levi serves the Kohen, it means that the Levi does jobs in the Mishkan, which are there to help the Kohanim do their jobs in the Mishkan. It's not just mundane things that they can use them for. That's not how it works.
And Samuel was a Levi, and he says, all I've got to do is wash somebody's feet. I don't want to do that.
And somebody's hands went before the Birchas Kohanim. Yes, yes. It's a job of service. That's what it is. Ay, ay, ay. Okay. V'shamru v'shmartcha, and they will safeguard your charges. U'mishmeres kol ha'ayel, and charge of all of the Mishkan, ach el klei hakodesh, but to the holy vessels, ve'el hamizbeach, and to the altar. We're talking about the tribe of Levi, lo yikravu, they shouldn't come close, ve'lo yamusu, they will not die, gam heim, gam atem, them and not you. Okay, so again, showing how each one has its place and each one's allowed to go up to a certain point. V'nilvu alecha, and they will join with you. V'shamru es mishmeres ayol mayed, and they will guard the charge of the ayol mayed. L'chal avaydes ha'ayol, to all the service of the ayol. V'zarla yikrav aleichem, and no stranger shall approach. V'shmartem es mishmeres ha'kodesh, it seems repetitive, but here we're getting to a very specific mitzvah, and here we have, you shall safeguard the mishmeres hakodesh, the charge of the holy, the es mishmeres hamizbeach, and the charge of the altar, the la yihya oid ketzef al bnei Yisrael, and there will be no more wrath upon bnei Yisrael. And I just want to, let's read one more pasuk, and I just want to show you something about this guarding. V'ani hine lakachti es acheichem halevim, and behold, I have taken the brethren, the Levim, mitoich bnei Yisrael, from amongst the Jewish people, lachem, for you, matana nisunim, they are given as a gift, lashem, for Hashem, la'avaydas avaydas ayel mayed, to serve the service in the ayel mayed, v'ata ubanecha itcha, and you and your children with you, tishmeru es kuhunaschem, shall guard your kahuna, l'chol dvar ha-mizbeach, to all the things matters to do with the mizbeach, with the altar, ulumi beis ula pareiches, and from the house and from outside and to the pareches, as we know, the curtain that's between the holy and the holy of holies. V'yavaditem avodas matana etenes kuhunaschem v'azar hakarev yumas. Right, and you shall serve, and this is a present, a service of a present that Hashem has given you, your kahuna. And the main thing, as we can see, an alien who approaches shall die. Alien means somebody who is not a kohen, or even a Levi who goes where he shouldn't go. But of course, Levim are allowed to go to certain places. So just on your other sheets that I gave you, there is just one halacha, the top halacha. I put it, printed it from the Rambam, and the halacha tells us something interesting about the fact that, let's see if I have one. I think I have an extra one there. I don't know what I did with my actual sheets. Did I leave it in the... Oh, here it is. Beautiful. Okay. So it says like this, that the Shmiras HaMikdash, no, on page number one there, Shmiras HaMikdash, which means the guarding of the Mishka, of the Beis HaMikdash, is a positive commandment, actually one of the 613 commandments. And it's a very interesting question, because so far we made it sound as if they're there to guard, that the people shouldn't touch things they shouldn't. But really the truth is, that's not the obligation of the Kohanim and the Levim. Why do we have guards out all, and it's actually they're posted at different points. There are 24 groups of guards put in different parts of the Beis HaMikdash. Why are they there? What's the main reason? So he says, Afal pi she'ein sham pachat be'ayivim. We don't have any fear of enemies, v'lo listed, and not robbers. She'ein shmirasai ela kavod lei. The idea of putting guards by the Beis HaMikdash is honor for the Beis HaMikdash. He says, Einai daime palterin sheyesh alav shaymrin. You cannot compare a palace which has guards, lepalterin sheyesh alav shaymrin, to a palace which doesn't have guards. What's the idea? It's a very fascinating thing. And why does he point it out? The Rambam tells us, you know, it's interesting. When you think about the Beis HaMikdash, that's the place where Hashem's Shechina is. So you would imagine that the safest place on earth is the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody can possibly, if a robber can go there, well then it's not a Beis HaMikdash, then Hashem's not there. Obviously, if Hashem's Shechina is revealed, we would imagine that that would be enough to keep anybody away, not only because they're afraid, but because something would happen to them, right? As we see, even from all the stories that we've just had. So why do we need all these guards all around? So he explains that the guards, the idea of the guards on the Beis HaMikdash is really totally to do with the honor that we are meant to show the Beis HaMikdash. And fascinatingly, when were the guards stationed? So it says, the Rambam tells us in detail, that there was actually 24 groups. 21 of them were from the tribe of Levi. 3 were from the tribe of the Kohanim. It would be a rotation throughout the year. Different families would come to Jerusalem for like 2 weeks and do this job of guarding. And it was a privilege. And mainly they would stand at night. And I did make a copy. And I just want to read you something quite fascinating, what would happen with these guards. So they would stand there at night, and you could imagine, as we all know, anybody who ever had to do a night shift, night shifts are not easy. We're usually, hopefully, tired at night and awake during the day. So what happens to the Levium is that they have to remain awake the entire night. Now, it's not so simple, and the Gemara actually discusses that sometimes Levium would fall asleep on the job, and that wouldn't be very nice, because this is, as we can see, a job to do with honor of Hashem, so it's an important job to remain fully awake. So it says that there were certain Kaihanim who would walk around with a torch. The question is if they had a torch or they would light torches along the way and check if the Levium have fallen asleep. Now, what happens if a Levi did fall asleep? So I just want to read you how the Rambam writes it. It's quite amazing. It says, an overseer was appointed over all the watches of the guards. He was called the officer of the Temple Mount. Interesting. Ish Harabais. And what he would do is, throughout the night, he checked all the watches. Torches were lit before him. If a guard did not stand before him and greet him, peace be upon you, officer of the Temple Mount, right? So in other words, that shows the person's at least half asleep for sure, because he's not noticing that this guy is coming. So what would happen? He would assume that he was sleeping, and he would strike him with his staff. He was even granted permission to burn a sleeping guard's clothing. So, and interesting, the Rambam writes, thus it was commonly said in Jerusalem, what is the noise in the temple courtyard at night? It must be the voice of a Levite being beaten and his clothes burned because he slept on his watch. It's a very fascinating idea. What's the idea? So it sounds like almost like a joke, but it's not a joke. The idea being, and it's a beautiful concept, as we said, we're not guarding from robbers. It's an honorary guarding. What's the idea of honorary guarding? The idea is that the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, the place where Hashem rests, should always be uppermost in our minds. We should always be focused that Hashem's Shechina is resting there. So, of course, people who live in Jerusalem, it's in a way easier to remember, but sometimes you could get busy in your activities and you could forget. People who live in the rest of the land of Israel, if you're aware that there are these sets of guards, and all the time you see people traveling to and from Jerusalem, I'm the next set of guards, and there's always this whole thing about it. It makes people aware, and the guarding itself instills in people that awareness that there is Hashem resting in the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we need these guards, and it gives everybody that sense of focus. So a very beautiful thing the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains, but why only at night? Aren't we supposed to focus 24 hours a day that Hashem is there? Because during the daytime hours, they would be busy working in the Beis HaMikdash, right? There would be sacrifices brought. People would come, whether they had to do confession. There was lots of different, the menorah was lit. There were many different activities that were taking place in the Beis HaMikdash. So nobody could forget that the Beis HaMikdash, that Hashem is there. At night, there weren't specific jobs. And that's why, in order to keep the focus, the guards specifically guard at night. But what happens on Friday night? I want to show you something beautiful. This is a fascinating thing because, in truth, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, really a lot of things were done that we are not permitted to do on Shabbos. That's true. But some things weren't done. Now, we said that the overseer who would go check would light these lights. Did you do that on Friday night? Did they light lights the whole Friday night? So I want to show you what the Rambam says. A fascinating thing. It says, how he says it. This pattern was followed each night except on Shabbos Eve. Then they did not hold torches in their hands. Rather, they checked by the light of the candles, which remained burning from the Shabbos Eve, meaning that they lit before Shabbos, obviously a big candle, something that would remain throughout the night, and put enough oil that would remain throughout the night at all the different spots, and that's how they would check. And this also represents something very powerful, because the idea is that now we are in Golos, we're in exile, and the truth is exile is compared to night, because God is not revealed. Now is when we need guards more than ever. Now is when we need to put extra things in place so that we retain our focus, because there's so many distractions, as well as the fact that Hashem is so obscured. I mean, it's so easy to say there is no God. There's nothing happening, right? The world is so messed up. Everything's so confused. Everything is so difficult. There's so many challenges. So it's hard to see and to feel the presence of Hashem. So at night, during the Golos, that's when we really have to put up guards. But what happens? What does Friday night symbolize? We all know that time of Mashiach is compared to Shabbos. when it comes to the time of Mashiach, then we won't need to light any more candles, right? Because then it's going to all be lit up. But what do? We know something very beautiful, and this is a very, very valuable lesson. The light that we will enjoy, the revelation, so to speak, the clarity, let's say, that we will enjoy when Mashiach will come, where does that come from? How will we have that clarity? Through the candles that we are lighting now, even though now it doesn't feel like it. In other words, on Erev Shabbos, now, we light candles, and we put guards in place, and we focus. And what will happen is when Mashiach will come, that's when we will feel the benefit of all the effort that we put in now. And that's what we have to realize, especially now, at this time in history, that now we are really Erev Shabbos. So now it's even more important for us to Chaparayim Tez, quickly not forget to light the candles now, so that when Mashiach will come, when there will be the tremendous revelation, we will benefit from it. We will have clarity, because the more light the candles that we light now, the better we will see then. That's how it works. So it's a very beautiful idea, symbolic of many things, but on a practical level, this is what happened in the Beis HaMikdash all the time that the Beis HaMikdash stood. Because imagine they would have to re-sew their garments if it was burned. It's a fascinating thing. There's a whole discussion about, are you allowed to, it's like Baal Tashchis, you know, you're not allowed to just burn clothing. And if you know, it's interesting when you talk about the environment and all, everybody thinks, you know, it's a modern thing. But we have a mitzvah of Baal Tashchis, of not wasting, right, of being very careful of things that, in other words, with us, burning clothing is actually considered a negative thing. It was a practice, I think, of the Amorites, and when they would mourn, they would take clothing and they would burn it. And it says that we should never do those kinds of things. And one of the reasons is the wastage of it. So it's interesting, but over here, it had a specific purpose. So anyways, this is just an interesting halacha that comes through just these psukim. Okay, now we're going to move on to the next topic. Very interesting. Okay, next one. So the next one will go in Pasuk Ches. I just want to show you. Just want to see. Yeah, okay, so now we start. Here we're going to start with the 24 presents. And as I say, I'm not going to go into all of them very detailed. These are very detailed things about different parts of the Karban that the Kohanim get. But I just want to read you a few psukim and a beautiful Rashi on this Pasuk. So Pasuk Ches. Vayidabra Hashem. Vayidabra Hashem el Aharon, and Hashem spoke to Aharon, and it says, Rashi tells us right away, he didn't speak directly to Aharon, because that's quite unusual in this case. There could have been cases, but over here, Hashem spoke to Moshe and told him to share this with Aharon, because this is about Aaron's job. V'ani hine nasati lecha. It's funny how this comes up so many times, this concept, but we'll see in a minute. Hine, behold, I have given you es mishmeres trumaisai, the safeguard of my offerings. Truma is a present, an offering, that lechol kodshei b'nei Yisrael, of all the sanctities of the Jewish people, lechon nesatim, I have given it over to you, lemashcha, as a distinction, ulevanecha, and to your children, lechak aylam, as a law forever. In other words, the Kaihanim get special things that really the Jewish people designate and say it's holy to God. Who do they give it to? They give it to the Kohen, right? The Kohen is the one that has special benefits for many of these things. I'll just read you quickly a little bit as he says, this will be for you from the most holy, min ha'esh, from the fire, as he says, kol karbanam, of all of their sacrifices, l'chol menchasam, that every meal offering, u'l'chol chatasam, and all the sacrifices that they bring when they, the sin offerings, u'l'chol ashamam, and every guilt offering, asher yashivu li, kaidesh kadashim l'cha hi l'uvanecha, that they bring to me, so it shall be holy for you and your sons, meaning to say, when the Jewish people bring different sacrifices, we know that the Kohanim get to eat certain portions from it. Different sacrifices have different rules. There's one sacrifice, the Ayla, that's the one that's all burned up, but most sacrifices, this the sacrifice for a sin and the guilt offerings, there are certain portions of the sacrifice that meat is allowed to be eaten by the Kohen. Certain sacrifices are only allowed to be eaten by the Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash itself, which means that that would only be eaten by a Kohen who is pure, who is in the Beis HaMikdash, probably working on the job at that time. He doesn't take it home to his family. That one he is only allowed to eat, because that's called Kodesh Kodashim, in the Beis HaMikdash, and you're only allowed to eat it for a certain amount of time. It's like, in other words, only for a day and a night. But then there are certain sacrifices, parts that you are allowed to take home to your family, because don't forget, they have, this is, as we say, this is how they support their family. So there are certain meat that is allowed to be taken home, and there that's allowed to be eaten by the wives and the children, and that's allowed to be eaten for 2 days and one night. It's interesting, all the different parts of the animals, fascinating halachas. This is discussed quite at length in the Mishnah and the Gemara, you know, all the different details of it, how it works. And as he says, B'kaydish ha-kadashim techlenu kol zachar yeichel ha-yisei kaydish yelecha. So this part, as we said, this is only when you're pure, when you're holy, it's holy of holies in the Beis HaMikdash. V'zel lecha in pasuk yirala, v'zel lecha trumas matanam, and this shall be like what's set aside from their gift, l'chol tnufais b'nei Yisrael, all the wavings of b'nei Yisrael, l'chol nesatim, I've given them over to you, l'vanech, and to your children, u'liv naisecha, and to your daughters, itcha, with you, l'chayk aylam, as a law forever, kol tar b'beisecha, yeichal oisai, anybody who is pure in your household can eat from it. It's interesting because when it comes to daughters, the daughters of a kayin also partake of the meat from the carbon, but only until she gets married. What do I mean? If she marries a kayin, she continues. But if she marries out, if she doesn't marry a kayin, which is fine, then she doesn't. Then she can't eat any more from the kabbalas. Then she loses that opportunity because now she's not part of the kahanim family anymore. She goes to her husband's family, which is fascinating. But just his own thing. I know that's a good question. If she goes back, I'm not sure. Sylvia, I'm not sure. Good question. Don't know. That's a good question. Okay. And then he says, this is all like the list.
She's a widow,
but the question is divorced. I'm not sure. It's interesting. And maybe I think it also has to do with what age she, I don't know, it could be, I don't know what stage. Anyway, and maybe if she has children, lots of different things. She's all the different details, all the different presents, as we're saying, all the best of your oil and the best of your wine and grain, right? That's what we give to the kayin. Do you know that we give to Levi, you give meiser, right, which is a tenth. But I don't know if you know the percentage that is given to a kayin. It's actually much less. I don't know if you remember what truma. Truma, in truth, doesn't have a percentage according to Torah. But the chachamim, they did establish. They say a 60th, a 50th, or a 40th. And the most common is a 50th, which means 2%. It's not so much, but it's not so little either, depending on if you're a very successful farmer. So you give the oil, right? As you can see, you give different things. That's how the kohen lives. He gets all these different things. The reason the kohen doesn't get the 10th is because he also gets from all the karbanos, all the sacrifices. He gets all the meats. The other thing we know he gets, I'll show you. If you look at your booklet, I made you a list. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'll show you just to show you. It's very interesting. And the Midrash says they list it all. There's all the different presents of the Kayhanim there. What have I done? And they have their, you can see they have, here it is, on page number 2. You can see it says parts of an animal, parts of a chattas, that's all the different parts of the animals. The remainder of the oil used to purify a leper, the 2 loaves offered on Shavuos, the showbread, remember every week? The chalas that they make, the remainder of the flour offering, the remainder of the omer offering, and then we're going to get to the male of the firstborn of a kosher domestic animal must be given to the kohen, who offers up a certain part, and then he eats certain parts of the tithe, the thanksgiving. You can see, he goes on the next page, the hides of the karbanis, a portion of the crop, and then obviously, as we said, the levy also sets aside a tithe. And then the first wool of the shearing, the shoulder, the jaws, the stomach of every animal that is slaughtered, the money for the redemption of the firstborn, as we said, pigeon, haben, we'll see in a minute a little more about that, and the redemption of the firstborn of a donkey, the field consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash and not redeemed by the owner within its allotted time, a field dedicated as cherim, property of the kayanim, property, and this is the last one is interesting, what is gezel hager? This is fascinating. You know, when somebody, God forbid, somebody steals, then when they pay back, they have to pay back, there's an additional amount. You pay back an addition of 1/5 more than what you've stolen. Now, what happens if somebody steals from a convert, and then the convert dies? Now, if a normal person, like an ordinary person, passes away, so you give to the family. But what happens if this convert, by some chance, doesn't have family?
Goes to the convert.
so goes to the Kohen. Very interesting. Fascinating thing. Yeah, yeah, is that interesting? So it's funny how it all works. It's fascinating. So that's how, so all these different things, that's how the Kohen lives. The Bikurim, as we mentioned, right? So all these different presents, it's an interesting life if you think about it. It's like we say some, you know, many times people say better not to have to live off the community. And yet, this is the way the Kohen lives. Constantly beholden, almost in a way, to the community, because that's what, that's mamash how they live. No, they weren't permitted to. Very interesting.
Go and look for farmers to support them.
Yeah, yeah. It's not simple. Not simple. That's for sure. But it's interesting because what it doesn't, fascinatingly, because there is 24 presents and there's a lot of meat given also and there's a lot of food given, it seems that the Kohanim didn't suffer as much as the Levim. It seems to be that the Levim were the ones who were called poor. That's what it says. The Levim were known that they were a little bit more poor than the Kohanim. They only got a tenth of, and you chose the Levi that you gave your tenth to, and there wasn't constant presence throughout the year, you know, it wasn't like that. And the Levim also acted as teachers. And that's also, so teachers and Levim, just together, a good combination.
Did they not to be paid as teachers?
See, I was just thinking, and I'm not sure. I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's a good question. Not sure. To find out. Okay. So that's fascinating. But the main reason why we would say that the Kohanim and the Levim are, in a sense, if you want to, the word is not poor, but that they are, they don't have that financial security because they don't own a piece of land. And we know all the way from then, that gives a person a sense of security.
The
cities of the Levian, yeah. But it wasn't their own, like, yeah, property, so to speak. Yes, that's exactly right. It's very interesting. All the way from then, that's how it was. That's exactly the idea. So a fascinating thing. It says, I'll just read you something beautiful because the truth is that the Gemara asks the big question. So why? Why is it that Hashem commanded Bnei Israel to support the Kohanim and the Levim and not allow them, so to speak, to make their own living? But the idea was really for this, that the Kohanim and the Levim should be free to remain, so to speak, devoted and holy to serve Hashem in the Mishkan and to inspire the rest of the Jewish people. And it's interesting because people don't realize that there always has to be a group of people that are set aside for that, because otherwise it doesn't work. People think, oh, I can work and learn. That's true. Everybody's responsible to work and learn. But it's not the same as when you're devoted totally to holy pursuits, which is not the way we're meant to live. Ordinary people, right? We're meant to work. It's true. But we do have to have people that we look up to that do spend their whole day and night just in the holy realm, so to speak. Because otherwise, Torah will be forgotten. It's just the way it works. Something that was instituted right away from the beginning.
But isn't it dangerous that because they have no property and they haven't got money or anything, that they could be susceptible to a bribe? You know, like kings should be judges should be wealthy.
So maybe a bribe, but what would they do with the bribe? In other words, what would it make a difference? They don't have any power in that way. As you're saying, a judge has makes
power
a decision.
Has huge power, yes.
But the Kohen doesn't have power in a sense, so why would you want to bribe him anyways? Like, what would he do for you? Yeah, well, maybe, you know what, that's not a bad bribe. Let
it's
him pray. That's not a bad bribe. Pray more in him. If he's holy, let him pray more. I hear what you're saying, Sylvia, but because a judge yields power, that's where we have a problem.
Yeah,
you see, because he can, So, but it's interesting. Okay, I want to show you something. I'm just thinking if we should go in the psukim first and then, okay. You know what, let's just look at two psukim and then I want to show you something beautiful to understand. One of the mitzvahs that are highlighted here is the Pidgin HaBen. Now, Pidgin HaBen has already been discussed in Parshas Bo when they left Egypt, right? That's initially where it was discussed, the idea of redeeming the firstborn. After the plague of the firstborn, we had the concept that we have to redeem the firstborn. Now, it's fascinating how halachas as far as that. I just want to show you the Pesukim over here because this is done by the Kohen. So, if you look into Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, that's the Bikurim. I just want to show you Yudalid. Let's look at Pasuk Tezvav. Kol Peterechem, every first issue of the womb. L'chol basar, and this is not just for person, you see, of every flesh, asher yakrivu l'Hashem, that they offer to Hashem, as he specifies, ba'adam, whether it be a person, uba behema, or an animal, yihye l'cha, l'chzari, shall be yours. Ach, hadoi tifte es bechar ha'adam. So every, it's interesting, because every firstborn belongs to the kayin. But does that mean that when you have a firstborn, is it a Jewish way that you take your firstborn son and now the Kayin gets to adopt it? No, that's not what happens, right? We keep our firstborns. So how does it work? So that's why we have the idea of redeeming the firstborn. Because really, technically, it belongs to the Kayin until we pay the Kayin those 5 silver coins. That's why if you've ever been to a Pidgin Aben, there is a little discussion with the father and the Kayin. You know, do you want to keep him? Do you want to, you know? So, yeah, we pay and we get to keep our son. What?
We had a
Pidgin. Did you have? Oh, wow.
I wanted to ask you a question. If there's a miscarriage first, is
no,
it still
then there's no Pidgin Aben. No pidgin. Because it has the first issue of, you see how the Pasuk says it? Kol Peter Rechem, the first issue of the womb. That's what it says. That's why Pidgin Aben is very rare, because it has to be an issue of the womb. So it has to be the first,
and
has to be no miscarriage, no C-section.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that disqualify a Pidgin Aben. No, from the family of Levi, nobody from the family of a Kayin. Meaning, not only if, obviously, if you're a Levi, but if your mother, like, so if the woman is a Bas Kayin, even though now she can't eat anymore from the Karbanis, but her child doesn't have a Pidgin Aben. So my mother was a Bas Kayin, so my brother didn't have a Pidgin Aben. But what's beautiful is that a Kayin can never be the Kayin at a grandchild's Pidgin Aben, because his grandchildren don't have a Pidgin Aben. But he can be at a great-grandchild. Because now, let's say my mother married a Yisrael, right? So we are all Yisraelim. And my grandfather, he wasn't for us, but for my cousins. He was the Kayin at a great-grandchild's Pidgin Aben, which is quite a beautiful idea. So there's a lot of things that disqualify, which is what makes it quite rare. Obviously, if a girl is born first, that's it for that family also. So there's a lot of different reasons why you don't. But in the occasion that you do, it is a very beautiful mitzvah. And one thing people don't realize is that even though it's to be done when the child turns 30 days, right, on the 31st day, Ashkenazim and Sephardim have a few hour difference, either in the afternoon or in the evening, whatever it may be. But the point is, on the 30, when he's already 30 days old, what happens if somebody didn't have a Pidgin Aben and the time passed? Anytime you are aware, do it. People don't know that. Sometimes people become aware when they're 50 years old that they never had a Pidgin Aben. It's a mitzvah that they have to have. And they do it then. Yeah, you do it then. If you're aware that your parents didn't know, I don't know, sometimes people were born during the war, some people don't even know about the mitzvah, whatever it may be, then it's a responsibility. So the responsibility really originally is on the father, obviously, because the baby's only a month old. But afterwards, it is your responsibility, if you haven't had one, to redeem yourself, so to speak. And it's fascinating. So it happens. It does happen where people are older and realize and do it later on.
Must it be your own money, or can you get it?
Well, it should be your own money. It's not that much money. it's an interesting, it's a beautiful idea. So it says like this. So this actually interesting. It's not only for a person, but it's also for an animal, and it will be to you. And so redeem es bechar ha'adam. So obviously the firstborn of a person we redeem, and who else do we redeem? The es bechar ha'behema ha'tmeya tifteh. And if it's an impure animal, right? Because an impure animal, what's the kohen going to do with it, right? So you redeem it. And you give the money to the kohen. But what happens if it is a kosher animal? And then he says, from when it is, mi ben chaydesh tifte, you redeem it from when it's a month old, be'erkecha, in how much it's worth, so to speak, because the Torah gives amounts that a person is worth at a certain age and a certain gender, whatever it is. Kesef chameshes shkolim, it should be 5 shkolim, b'shekel ha'kaydesh, estrim geira, which is the value of estrim geira, whatever it is in those times it was. Who? Ach b'char shar. Ay b'char kesef. Ay b'char ay. So we're talking about the kosher animals. What do you do with them? Firstborn of an ox, the firstborn of a sheep, the firstborn of a goat. Loy sifte. You should not redeem. Those you don't redeem. Kaydeshem. They are holy. As damam tizrek ala mizbeach. So you actually give that animal to the kayin. The kayin throws the blood on the mizbeach. The eschelbam taktir. Isher l'reyach nichayach l'Hashem. And the fat you shall cause to go up in smoke as a fire offering. But what happens with the flesh of that animal, Ubsaram, Yielach, and the flesh shall be for you, just like the other portions of an animal that you receive from a korban. It gives the example, kachaza hatnufa ukeshay kayomim l'chayyeh. These are the parts that the kohen gets from a korban, the breast of the waving and the right leg. What does he mean by that? That you can eat it for 2 days and one night. So the kosher animal, you give the... So you see that the kohanim must have had a very high protein, very high meat diet. Yeah, it's interesting. It does say that. Fascinating thing, because they got a lot of meat. That's what would happen. And they would eat it. They would, yeah, that's what the families... Nowadays, we know it's quite healthy. I don't know that it was considered in those days. But yeah, they lived well. They didn't have a problem with being hungry. But interesting. So let's understand. I just want to understand, what is this mitzvah? Why? All very nice, you know, you do it, the firstborn, not from the... Why? What's the whole idea of the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen? Why do we redeem the firstborn son?
Because of dying out of Egypt.
Okay, so what is that? What's the idea?
The Egyptians firstborn
were killed. Right, and therefore?
Therefore, our firstborn belonged to Hashem.
Why?
Because he redeemed them. He didn't do anything to them.
He didn't kill them. So interesting, Riva, so yeah, 100%, so that's just one part of the equation, because when Hashem came down and did Makas Becheiros, right, killed all the Egyptian firstborn, the truth is that our firstborns weren't very much different than the Egyptians' firstborns. In other words, at that point in time, the Jewish people were steeped in idol worship, it says, right? We weren't so amazing. There was no reason for Hashem to skip over our homes. When the plague came, our firstborns almost should have been killed alongside the Egyptians. The fact that Hashem didn't kill our firstborn was an incredible kindness, as we say, and therefore, as we say, it's almost like they became Hashem's, and that's why he didn't kill them. So once they become Hashem's, then in order for them to lead ordinary lives, and not lives like the Kohanim and the Levim, right? Because a Bechor doesn't lead a life like a Kohen and a Levi. You realize, a Bechor has land, a Bechor goes to work, does durable stuff, doesn't remain, you know, like constantly pure, right, as we say. How does that happen? Because we redeem him. Do you understand? Otherwise, he should have been sanctified to Hashem and lead the sanctified kind of life, pure and holy, in the Beis HaMikdash. But that's not how he lives. So there's two parts to it. Very interesting. So the Chachamim say there's really two parts. One part is the idea of the fact that we were not killed alongside the other firstborn. The other thing is that we know initially who was supposed to be set aside to serve Hashem. Do you remember? Originally, the firstborn. And then when the Jewish people sinned by Chet HaEgel, by the golden calf, the firstborn privileges were taken away from the firstborns and given to the tribe of Levi. Therefore, they have to redeem themselves. Do you understand? So there's really two parts. Because initially also they should have been sanctified, they should have been holy. Now they're not holy anymore, but they have to redeem. And in the desert, they actually exchanged themselves for a Levi, physically. There was a few left over there. But now we don't do that, so now you just pay, and then you become, so to speak, ordinary, and you can live your life as you should. But I just want to show you some beautiful, beautiful lessons. Sure.
Sort of, to clarify this, we were slaves in Egypt.
Right.
So how did they have time to have idol worship and all that? They
Idol worship doesn't take much time.
Doesn't take much time.
No, so it's a good question, Sylvia. I must tell you, that's a fascinating thing that we see in life. Look how
they were different.
They knew. We said, but they kept themselves different. They had the same clothes.
The generation died out.
Yeah.
No, but
that
was not much.
Oh,
but in Egypt, the actual slavery.
You see, the slavery was very challenging, but the prevailing,
and the woman.
I know, but the prevailing, but it wasn't just the woman. It was the, if we think about even ourselves, you know, we live in a culture, right? You know how hard it is to retain our belief in, you know, nowadays more than ever. If we stop to think about how all of the foreign ideas come into our heads without us even realizing it, that's like idol worship, you know? I mean, I'm just going to say a simple one. For example, I mean, this is a simple one that's not even from now. This is from years ago. But the idea of worshiping the youth, right? The youth are the... And then you cast aside older people, right? That's so antithetical to the Torah way. And yet, it becomes part of the culture. You just...
quickly.
It just we just don't even realize what we take in from the culture and what becomes our belief system unless we stop and think about it and continue learning. So it's not simple, and sometimes when you're slaves, it's even harder. You hope so. You hope so, Rona. Yeah, so you know, Rona, if the parents, you're right, if you've had the right education. You know, if you had a strong education, if you had a strong education with your parent, you understand, if you had that type of formative years with a strong, but some people haven't been given that, you know, it's not so simple. And there's a lot of outside influences. It's not easy. It's not easy. The world is not, it's, yeah, peer pressure. This, not blaming any, you know, you, it's not the parents, nobody's fault. It's the way the world works. It's very hard. It's a very, very challenging. So that's why we keep inspiring ourselves.
We're not slaves. I know. People don't accept that.
No.
But they say, how could they not have been slaves? Why did the Egyptians sort of, were they respectful to priests?
Yeah, they were. Yeah. That was part of also, the part of their culture as well. That's why they didn't mind to have one tribe set aside, you know. Nothing ever makes any sense, as we know, even with anti-Semitism, never, right?
Oh.
Yeah. I want to just, if you go to page number 4, I want to show you something. I just want very quickly, a little bit inside. I think we're going to have to continue next week to see the depths. But it's actually beautiful to understand this mitzvah, because this mitzvah has a lot of beautiful ideas that really day-to-day to live with. So I'll read you, first one is the Sefer Achinuch, the one on top. And we always say, it's very beautiful. Mishar Shei Mitzvah Zu. Sharotza Hashem Yisparach L'Zakei Seinu. That Hashem wanted to give us the merit to give us the merit and to refine us. La'asais mitzvah, to do a mitzvah, bereshis period, with the first of our fruit, meaning in this case the first of what we give birth to. Leman das, in order for us to know, ki hakol shaloi, that everything belongs to God. Ve'ein loy la'adam Dovra ba'ilam, and that a person doesn't have anything in the world, rak mashe yechalek lo Hashem yisparach b'chasodav, only what Hashem has designated, what Hashem has divided, what Hashem has given to this person in his kindness. V'yavin zeh, and the person will understand this, bir oisei, when he sees, ki acher she yiga ha'adam kama yigiyas, that after a person has worked hard, put a lot of effort into something, v'tarach kamatrachim, right? Put tremendous effort, ba'ilamay, in his world. So let's say if we're talking about whether having a child, or we're talking about the first of our animals, or the first of our crops, whatever it may be, this takes a lot of effort, and we've put a lot of work into it. Nevertheless, and then what happens? V'yigia l'zman sh'asaperi. And finally, a fruit comes out, right? You see the results of your hard labor. V'chaviv olav, and it is precious to you, Rachis period, the first of your fruits, kivavas enai, as we say, like the apple of your eye. And we know, you know, whatever, nobody has favorites, but a firstborn has a special place, a first child, a first grandchild. There's something very special in that first one. So we say, miyad noisnei l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what are we asked? Immediately, we give it to God. Umisroikein rishusai mimenu, and he empties his jurisdiction, so to speak. In other words, he realizes, who does it really belong to? Who does it really come from? Your hard work, your effort, your talent, your brains, nothing to do with it. It's all from the kindness of Hashem. And therefore, you're willing to give it directly back to Hashem, as we say. Umachnisa l'rushus sapayre, you put it into the realm of Hashem, belongs to God. But Hashem, in his ultimate kindness, what does he do? He says, redeem it. Meaning, very beautiful thing. Yeah, it belongs to Hashem, and we know that, but you could also benefit. We share the nachas, so to speak. This is the gift that Hashem gives us. It's such a tremendous, magnificent gift. The oid, and another thing, liskar ha'neis, to remember the miracle, the great miracle, sha'asa lanu Hashem yisparach, the b'chayr mitzrayim, that Hashem did for us with the firstborns in Egypt, sha'hargam v'yitzilanu miyadam, that he killed them and he saved us. So two things. Every time we do a pidyon haben, we realize that all our efforts, all our everything that we invest in something, and we reap, it's amazing, we have something we can show off. It's not ours, doesn't belong to us. We didn't even get it. It's not from our efforts. It's from the kindness of Hashem. And therefore, immediately, we say it belongs to you, Hashem. And in order for us to have any benefit, we have to first and foremost do a whole, like a whole ceremony for us to remember and to refocus and to thank Hashem. And then, yeah, then we could also have some benefit and enjoy the fruits of our labor. And of course, the gratitude to Hashem that He saved us in Egypt. So again, it's such a strong thing, this concept of gratitude, but it's more than just gratitude. It's acknowledgement that everything that we have comes from Hashem constantly. I feel bad, time is really up, but we're going to see, I think next week is a public holiday. But the week after, we still have one more share for this term because I very much want to show you there's some more beautiful lessons and to finish the parsha to see the other beautiful. It's just beautiful ideas for us to live with, as we say, day to day. Okay, well, have a wonderful week.
Okay.
Yes, I know. She told me yes. Okay, just see if anybody has any. I'm sorry that I didn't share the psukim with you. Next time, also bring a chumash would be good. I'll just make that if they want to, or what am I doing? Sorry, I just want to see if anybody has any questions, but I can't. Here we go. Sorry. Okay. You can unmute yourselves. I think so. Yes, hi. Yes, Louise, you're very welcome. Sorry that you had trouble. I don't know what happened, but...
I've managed to find my way.
Good. Fantastic. Good to see you. You too.
Thanks so much.